This podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Allergy season is here, and so is BOGO. Buy one, get one. To order, go to EdenPure.com and put in code word Howie BOGO.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grace Curley Show. Happy, happy Friday. It's a very happy Friday here at our studios. We've got some delicious food that was just brought in, and we have a show jam-packed with great guests. My next guest writes for Red State. His name is Shipwrecked Crew. That is his secret name. And he's talking now a lot about the Hunter Biden gun story. I want to give a quick synopsis of what happened. Hunter Biden's ex-girlfriend, who's also his late brother's widow, found a revolver in his truck, and she tried to get rid of it. So she wrapped it in a black plastic bag, like a trash bag, and she threw it away in a trash bin near a market that they frequent. And then she went home. She told Hunter about this. He freaked out, told her to go back. When she went back to this trash bin, the gun was not there. And now the story was in Politico, and they kind of made a point of saying that, yes, this is bad, but no, there's no crime here, or at least not a crime that is often, you know, followed up on. And so I was reading this story today by Shipwreck Crew, and he had a whole different take on it. And he's going to explain this to the audience in a way that's very easy to understand, because it is a little bit in the weeds. Thank you for joining the show, Shipwrecked Crew. And tell us what you think this story is missing.
Well, good afternoon, Grace. Excuse me. You know, as someone who was a federal prosecutor for 23 years, I'm very well versed in the approach that the Department of Justice takes to handling prosecutions of offenses involving gun handling or gun violations. Obviously, you know, those kinds of statutes run up against the Second Amendment, the right of the citizens to keep and bear arms. So what Congress has done in an effort to, you know, impose some gun handling, gun possession restrictions is they have made it illegal in a variety of circumstances connected to illegality for handguns to be, or firearms in general, to be possessed. The most obvious one, and probably one everybody's, you know, heard about, is that it's illegal for a felon to possess a handgun. You know, a felon doesn't have Second Amendment rights.
Right.
They lose it by virtue of their conviction. Well, another one that Congress created that people might have heard of is it's unlawful for someone under an order of domestic protection. You know, if your spouse takes out a order against you, you know, domestic abuse claims, you can't possess a firearm while that order exists. So one that the government has, one that Congress passed, is in Section 922 of the United States, Title 18 of the United States Code, is it's unlawful for a user of controlled substances or an addict to be in possession of a firearm. It's a felony, and a lot of people go to jail over this crime every year. It's prosecuted widely. It's prosecuted heavily. It's prosecuted in every judicial district of the United States. It is a go-to charge that DOJ uses in a variety of circumstances whenever they find guns in circumstances where other illegal activity is going on and that illegal activity fits within the confines of the statute. So Hunter Biden is a longtime abuser of cocaine by his own admission, given in interviews. Independent evidence. He was kicked out of the Naval Reserve for testing positive for cocaine use in 2014, I believe. He's given interviews about his long struggles with using cocaine. On his laptop, there are videos of him using cocaine. This is not a secret. It is, in fact, I'm confident, a basis upon which Hunter Biden was judged while Joe Biden was vice president. Hunter Biden was certainly considered a national security threat by the Secret Service. because of the wreck that his personal life was. So now you have these events come together in October of 2018 involving this handgun that Hunter Biden apparently purchased, according to the records, on October 18th, I believe, and then which his significant other at the time, Hallie Biden, the widow of Bo, Hunter's older brother, discovered the gun searching for something in the pickup truck, wrapped it in a plastic bag, and drove to a nearby grocery store and threw it in the trash. There's no question that he owned the gun. He produced documentation showing where he had purchased it to the police when they were trying to recover it. The police went to, or the some federal agents, and that's a whole different angle. Federal agents went to the gun dealer, confirmed that he had, in fact, purchased it on the day he did. So right there you have a confirmed user of controlled substances in possession via ownership of a firearm.
Now,
that is a crime that generally carries a sentence of between 20 and 30 months in federal prison.
Now, two questions, shipwrecked crew. How was he discharged from the Navy? Was it a dishonorable discharge? Was it just an administrative one? And my second question is, why did Politico say that lying on a form is a felony, though prosecutions for it are exceedingly rare, if you're saying that this is prosecuted all the time?
Okay, two things. First of all, I'm not completely conversant in military judicial matters and exactly how his discharge went down. My understanding from what I've read is that you can only get a dishonorable discharge by virtue of an actual court martial, and that he was not court martialed, but he was administratively separated, which I think is a euphemism for he just agreed to resign and depart without further proceedings against him. And so I think that's called a less than honorable discharge. It's not a dishonorable discharge. I'm not sure how minor a distinction that is, but I think that is a distinction under the United States Code of Military Justice, UCMJ. Regarding the form, we're talking about two different, Politico's talking about a different crime. Lying on any government form is a 1001 violation. It's a false statement to a government official. You lie on the form the government says you have to fill out under penalty of perjury, you've committed perjury. You've made a false statement to the government. That's one crime. Being a user in possession of a firearm is a completely different crime. Okay. Lying on government forms is a prosecution that is not often undertaken because in the case of firearms, there are literally millions of these forms. I mean, there's a form for everybody that purchases a firearm. It has to be filled out as part of the transaction with a licensed firearm dealer. So, if you were to set about trying to prosecute everybody who uses controlled substances because they check no on the box on the form, federal agents and federal prosecutors wouldn't have time to do anything else.
Got it. But what you're saying is...
On the other hand, prosecuting drug users who are actually found in possession of a firearm, that's done all the time.
Got it. And now, Shipwreck Crew, I want to ask you, though, you do talk a little bit here about the timeline with the laptop and with those pictures. What would have to be proven as far as that goes for this to become a reality?
Well, I mean, the pictures are just evidence. They're evidence of, apparent drug use. Now, you don't have a chemical test of what he's smoking in the picture. Oftentimes that's an evidentiary stumbling block. It's like, well, what's he really smoking there? You have a picture of it, but you don't know what it is. But, it's a circumstance where the evidence of his cocaine use, by his own admission, is so well documented that, you look at the pictures and the videos on the laptop that are captured on the laptop when it was given to the FBI. And it's just another, a building block in making the case that he was a user of cocaine in October of 2018 when he purchased this firearm and possessed it. So it's important in that sense, but, that's really the only sense. The laptop is just a source of evidence of the status of being a user.
Now, I have one more question for you, because there was a lot of back and forth about the Secret Service and their involvement in this incident. And you talk about that and where it took place and, you know, the police that were called in. Can you kind of give people an idea of whether or not Secret Service were involved in this?
Well, it seems to be confirmed. In fact, there was another document posted after I posted my story online, which appears to be a text message sent by Hunter to somebody talking about, you know, the rockiness of his relation with Holly in that particular time frame. And Hunter says that, you know, after she threw the gun away, the police were called, the FBI came, and Secret Service came. So those are Hunter's own words, if what has been posted on Twitter is actually a text message that he has sent, which it appears to be. So I don't know that the Secret Service's presence is really in dispute. The Secret Service won't confirm it. It's odd because in October 2018, Joe Biden was no longer under Secret Service protection. He'd not been vice president for 2 years, and that protection detail ends for a vice president after a certain period of time. For president, it continues for most of their life, but for a vice president, it does not. So it's odd that the Secret Service was there. There's no explanation yet for why they were called. I posted some, you know, suppositions in my second story earlier today that I'm not surprised by it, because the local Secret Service in Wilmington, Delaware, and they have an office there, would have worked often with the Secret Service presidential or vice presidential protection detail out of Washington anytime Joe Biden came to Delaware. That's sort of the field office provides assistance and extra manpower. Well, they also work closely with state law enforcement providing that protection. It's not like, you know, the Secret Service brings 100 guys from Washington to establish a perimeter around Joe Biden's house when he goes to Delaware. They use locals who know the layout, they know the streets, they know the residents. So they use locals and state law enforcement working along with the Secret Service. So there's an 8-year period of time where the Secret Service agents in Wilmington would have been working closely with the Delaware State Police in protecting Joe Biden. And so I'm not surprised that there are personal connections between agents of the two agencies, state troopers and Secret Service agents in Wilmington, where this gun episode is investigated, according to the paperwork that Politico is referring on, although they don't post it online, which I thought was odd. I think there's probably stuff in it they don't want out. But there's it's not surprising to me that a trooper investigating this for the Delaware State Police would pick up his cell phone and call a local Secret Service agent that he knows from having protected Joe Biden and say, hey, guess what Joe Biden's ne'er-do-well son Hunter has done now? And a couple of Secret Service guys, you know, get in their cars, roll out from the office and head over to see what's going on. Doesn't strike me as odd at all. Doesn't strike me as is it appropriate? Absolutely not. Secret Service got no role to play. They should not be there. Their presence there now has to be explained, and their presence is subject to differing interpretations. I don't find it necessarily sinister just based on my own experiences, but it was inappropriate, and they should not have gone.
Shipwreck Crew, he writes for Red State, and some of these pieces are just unbelievable. I will tweet them out so people can find them. And thank you so much for joining the show. I feel like I have a better understanding of it now, but definitely a crazy story that I am still interested in, and I hope more information comes out about it. Thank you so much for joining the show, sir.
Take care, Chris.
All right, guys, we'll be back on the other side with the poll question and some more sound from yesterday's disaster of a press conference. This is The Grace Curley Show.
She's never held office, but she paid the Whiskey Priest's monthly rent once. She's Grace Curley. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. I just had some of that Aviva pizza. Wow, really, really yummy. All right, so we've been talking now about the Hunter Biden of it all, Joe Biden's press conferences, And I do want to talk a little bit about Twitter, because finally Jack Dorsey was asked about the fact that they banned the New York Post from Twitter. And his responses are exactly what you'd think. All of these Ministry of Truth people, it's all semantics. You know what I mean? Like it's you really feel as if you're being gaslit. And that's a term that the left likes to use. But they're the gaslighters. At a congressional hearing on misinformation and social media, Dorsey said Twitter made a total mistake by barring users from sharing the post bombshell October report about Hunter Biden's emails. Hunter Biden is truly the gift that keeps on giving. Twitter also locked the post out of its account for more than 2 weeks over baseless charges that the expose used hacked information. You guys remember that? This massive bombshell breaks about Hunter Biden that any other presidential candidate would have been run out of town for. And Twitter says that they can't share the story or allow others to share it because it might be Russian disinformation. Because it's unthinkable. It is inconceivable that Hunter Biden, the same guy who's trying to find discarded guns in trash bins, may have left his laptop at a repair shop.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Speaking of cannolis, we do have cannolis today. And we will be taking the cannolis. But nobody here is dropping any guns off in trash bins. But they think that is totally out of this world. That maybe Hunter just actually left it there and forgot about it. So they had to ban everyone from sharing the story. They made the New York Post delete their tweets because this could be Russian disinformation. Well, it turns out months later, when it doesn't matter anymore, that this was not Russian disinformation. It was actually all real news, which the media and these news outlets don't usually come across. They aren't used to seeing facts and actual photographs and things of that nature. So now Jack Dorsey's finally admitting, oh yeah, it was a big mistake. Big mistake. And then Steve Scalise says, all right, well, did anybody get punished for this censorship? Then he gives, runs around in circles. It's all so pathetic. Get clinically proven blood pressure support with delicious Superbeats heart chews by visiting getsuperbeats.com/grace. When you buy two bags, like I have right here, they'll throw in a third for free. That's getsuperbeats.com/grace, getsuperbeats.com/grace. Jared, what is the poll question and what are the results thus far?
Who are you more ashamed of, the president or the press?
Oh, the press. Every text I got from people during that press conference yesterday was, wow, and excuse my language, I hope my mom's not listening, but wow, the media sucks. They are awful.
The press is running away with it at 71%.
Jared, can we play one more Tucker Carlson cut here? Let's play cut 47.
But there's nothing average about Joe Biden. Time improves him. Like certain varieties of artisanal cheese, Joe Biden is meant to be aged. He just gets sharper and more pungent. His next campaign will be even tastier.
We have that to look forward to. He's aging like a blue cheese. All right, guys, when we get back, we have a great guest you don't want to miss. And we're talking about gun control. Don't go anywhere. It's Friday, and it's The Grace Curley Show.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. You know, it is Friday. We do have a lot of fun on Fridays, but I'm really excited about this next guest because it's a very serious problem. And I actually, Jared, I just dragged these into today's clips. I want to play for you guys a little bit of the sound from my next guest. You guys know him as he was the father of a young woman who was killed in the Parkland shooting. Her name is Meadow. His name is Andrew Pollack. And I remember when he first gave this speech at the White House, because I called my dad and I was really emotional because it was such a moving speech, and it was something that he was talking right to President Trump, and it was a really different take that a lot of people don't have after an atrocity like this happens. So, Jared, can we play a little bit of sound here? And I'm warning you guys, it is tough to listen to, but it's definitely worth giving a listen.
I'm never going to see my kid again. I want you all to know that. Never, ever will I see my kid. That's how I want it to sink in. It's eternity. My beautiful daughter, I'm never going to see again. And it's simple. It's not, we could fix it.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining the Grace Curley Show. Andrew, you there?
Yeah, I don't listen sometimes. I can't listen to it, so I don't think I ever watched it, that speech, ever.
I don't blame you. It's very emotional, and you talked a lot, though, in that speech about how you wanted to fix the problem, but you didn't want to focus on gun control and gun laws. And I remember you saying to the people there, that's a fight for a different time. We got to fix the problem. So tell us how you think this problem that obviously keeps happening could be helped.
Well, there's two things that need a lot of work on, and that's I'm focused on one that I think I could that I've been making a difference in. The thing I can't make a difference in is there's laws in place already that prevent the mentally ill from being able to purchase a rifle. They need to be put in the system where there's due process involved, not just, they're just taking someone's, with a red flag, they're just going to take someone's guns away from them because they had a bad day. I'm talking people that are evil, that are mentally ill with a history of mental illness, and they're evaluated by a professional. They go through the court system, and it's put on their background so they can never, ever purchase a firearm. And those laws are in place. We don't use them. In Florida, they call it a Baker Act. We don't have any mental health, mental illness facilities for people that are that sick. So those laws are in place. We should be working on it. And instead of politicians, they're focusing on gun bills. How about just focus on these people that should never be able to purchase a rifle that are sick? You know, they've been to the hospital for mental illness, dozens of times. But they're still able to go into a store and purchase it because they don't have a background. You know, there's so much talk from politicians. They want this type of background, universal backgrounds. Background checks only work if the individual has a background. So they should be working on that instead of focusing on more laws. And those laws are in place, just not enforced.
Yeah, and Andrew, you're cutting out a little bit, but I agree with...
Sorry.
It's okay. I agree with you on that, and I think that enforcing the laws is really the problem here, because like you said, there's no shortage of bills and laws that are passed about gun control. But my next question for you has to be, what are your thoughts on the FBI? I mean, we're hearing that just like in Parkland, the FBI did have some prior knowledge of this monster who did this in Boulder.
Well, they need to be held accountable. We have a wrongful death case against the FBI, and we're moving forward with it. We have some really good other parents. They have some great lawyers on it, and we got past their motion to dismiss. So they need to be held accountable. So there's things that they make changes. After every shooting, okay, if you just blame the gun, you never come out with the facts of really what went wrong. So you got to dissect everyone, and you could learn after each shooting so things don't happen again. You know, this murderer was a screaming mental case. He in high school, to his parents, on social media, just like the same thing that happened with my daughter. He threatened to shoot the school up, never arrested. Tried to kill himself, never put through the system where he would have a background check. He threatened to shoot. I said he threatened to shoot the school up. He trespassed at the school. He threatened to kill students. You know, these individuals need to be held accountable where it goes on their background, so they're not able to purchase a rifle. The FBI, they need to help be held accountable, so things like this don't happen again. But let me, those things I can't, I'm working on a case with the FBI. We have our lawyers on it. But there's something that I'm doing personally that could help prevent shootings. And I focused my whole life on it. And we've been making a lot of progress with it across the whole country.
Yeah, no, tell us about that. You have a program that's happening, and I think people would like to know where they could find out more about it.
Oh, that'd be great. So what I've been focusing on, you know, after my investigation, and I wrote a book, Why Meadow Died, if anyone's putting their children into a public school, they should get my book, Why Meadow Died. But when I was writing the book, I met with a lot of first responders, and they're heartbroken that they couldn't perform that day because they didn't have the right intel, they didn't have the proper monitoring of the cameras. So there's guys that retired. I know two guys that personally retired because they were so distraught over what happened. So what I'm doing is, I came up with a software, okay, and if there's anybody in law enforcement or any public gathering entity, I want them to go to my website, schoolsafetygrant.org, and look at my website. In a nutshell, what we do is we could connect the police to any entity with cameras within 5 seconds. So say that supermarket in Boulder, if they would have called 911, or we give them an app on their phone, they would light up in the Boulder Police Department, in their real-time crime center. They would see every camera in the supermarket, every camera in the school, a hospital, a church, within 5 seconds. It gives the police mapping to know exactly where the shooter is in the building. It gives the police the ability to talk over the PA. So within 5 seconds, they could be telling the shooter, drop your weapon, we're pulling in, we're in the parking lot, we're in the building, you with the red hat. They could be yelling over the PA system. And everybody has any temple, church, supermarket, school, they all have PA systems, malls, and we could connect the police to that. We also connect them to the fire alarms. My daughter was put out onto the third floor where she got shot 9 times because the teacher thought it would be a good idea to put her out into the hallway because she heard the fire alarms going off. Ignored the 90 rounds that went off inside the building, but because she heard the fire alarm, she thought that would be a good idea. So now from dispatch, they're able to look at the cameras, see no fire, silence the fire alarms, and instruct people what to do over the PA. And this is, we did all this within the last year and a half we've been working on it, and we've been implementing it in different police departments throughout the whole country. And I'm excited about it. Finally we're getting through this COVID, and we're able to, I see making a big difference. We would have made a difference in Boulder if they would have had my software.
I'm talking right now to Andrew Pollack, and I admire you so much because the speech you made when you were talking to President Trump, you were angry, and of course you have every reason to be angry. And I think everyone, when they saw you talking, they were thinking I would be the exact same way. But you didn't focus on the politics of it. And I can hear it right now in your voice. You're more focused on helping the situation and trying to avoid this in the future. And I want to encourage people to check out that site, schoolsafetygrant.org. Is there anything else you want to tell us, Andrew?
That word anger, I haven't lost any of it since that happened. You know, I get angry every time I walk through my hallway and I see my beautiful daughter's pictures on the wall. I get angry thinking about the people in Boulder that just sat there cowering and got shot, you know. So that's what I focus on. I try and focus on making a difference. These politicians that are going to bicker back and forth, gun laws and stuff like that, they'll never accomplish anything. They're not going to ban weapons. It's not. They'll have, you know, you could take pistols. You could take a shotgun. You could take a bomb. You know, the thing is to better equip the police to respond, and so they could respond efficiently. My software will shave minutes off response time, and we need to treat these mentally sick people. We need to give them backgrounds, and you need to open up some mental institutions, and,
I agree.
And you'll see a difference. And those are things we could accomplish. Not when they start focusing on different things that don't make a difference.
And Andrew, I don't want to play the sound cut because I know it's tough for you to hear, but I just want to tell you, one thing you said that really struck me was, you said getting into the building that you were at, I think it was Department of Education, you said there was a security guard in the elevator with me. How do you think that makes me feel, that there's a security guard in the elevator and all these schools are left like sitting ducks? And it got me thinking because I read bills all the time. I mean, the latest one was the Porculus bill full of, you know, all this crap. They're sending money to hamster research and Pakistani gender research. And it does make you think, why can't we afford to spend money, $90 million for illegal aliens to stay in hotel rooms by the border, but there's no money to make these schools safer?
Correct. And, you know, fortunately, Florida is a super Republican state with some great senators and House reps and the governor. We passed a bill in Florida that made it mandatory for there to be a police officer in every school, and we got them money too to help harden the schools. But you see, in other states, they're defunding the police and removing police officers from the schools. So if parents, it's not a good idea to send your child to a school where there's not a police officer. You wouldn't send them on a plane or to a sporting event where there's a mass gathering. So it's on the parents now. You have to do the smart thing. It's your responsibility to take care of your children. And you're right. You know, not even was there. I had to go through a metal detector at the Department of Education, and then the armed security in the elevator to press my button for me. Like I needed that, you know. But at the school where my daughter was, the murderer, not many people know this, he called Uber, and he got into the Uber with a Cabela's rifle bag. And the Uber driver saw him come out of his house and drove him to the school with the rifle bag, where he walked in right through an open gate and killed 17 people.
Andrew, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I know it never gets easier. Can you tell people where they can find you on Twitter and give the name of the website one more time?
Sure. It's schoolsafetygrant.org. And these are grants. We're giving it to police departments for free. Okay? So there's no reason why any police department, even if you don't have a real-time crime center, to reach out to us, we'll help you. And any church, temple, mass gathering, schoolsafetygrant.org. And you could find me at Andrew Pollock FL on Twitter.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. And please come on again soon. Thank you.
Anytime. Take care.
Thank you. And we'll play some of those clips, guys, on the other side. I mean, I talked to Andrew today and I said, I don't want to play these things if it's going to, you know, it doesn't get any easier. And like he said, he's not going to get any less angry. And I don't want to make him upset while he's doing the interview, but I do think they're worth playing. So we'll play them on the other side. A quick change of pace here, though, for 1 second, because I do have to tell you about something pretty exciting. If you've ever wondered what makes Omaha steaks so darn good, it's the aging process. Jared, tell everybody what we got here at the studio today.
Oh, we got some pork chops. We got some ground beef burgers. A lot of chicken. The chicken looks really good. We even got kielbasa.
I'm so
in natural casing, which is the only way to eat kielbasa.
These VIPs right now are looking at us going, what do you guys just get food all the time? And we do. Omaha Steaks ages their steaks at least 20 days because that's the sweet spot. It's where the magic happens. People say that all the time. It's all about the aging process. You can try those mouthwatering steaks in the Butcher's Best Sellers Grill Pack. It includes four of their iconic and fork tender Butcher's Cut Filet Mignons, four ultra juicy burgers, four savory pork chops, desserts, and so much more. Go to omahasteaks.com, enter Curly with an E into the search bar for a special price on the Butcher's Best Sellers package. Plus, you'll get four more chicken breasts and four more of those delicious burgers for free. We got this package today. They do not go skimpy on you. There's a ton of stuff in here. Omaha Steaks has been the leader of gourmet steaks and food since 1917. No one comes close to matching the flavor, tenderness, and value of Omaha Steaks. All right, so here's what you have to do. Go to omahasteaks.com, type keyword curly with an E in the search bar. That's C-U-R-L-E-Y. Like my great-great-great-great-grandfather, the mayor, and order the Butcher's Best Seller Pack today. Don't forget, you'll get the four free chicken breasts and four burgers. That's omahasteaks.com, keyword curly. We'll be back on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Jam-packed show so far, and we will have producer's picks in the next hour because I know everyone's craving a little bit of fun. But I did want to play some more sound. We had the father of a Parkland shooting victim on in the last segment, and he has some really amazing sound cuts. I don't know if you guys remember this. It was from when he met with President Trump in 2018. And I wanted to play this cut because I think right now when these horrible things happen and none of us have the answer, it seems like the liberals, their immediate response is gun laws and gun control. And this guy, Andrew Pollack, he has a different view of it. And I wanted to play this because it's heartbreaking, but it's worth listening to.
We can't forget about it. All the school shootings. It doesn't make sense. Fix it. Should have been one school shooting and we should have fixed it. And I'm pissed because my daughter I'm not going to see again. She's not here. She's in North Lauderdale at whatever it is, King David Cemetery. That's where I go to see my kid now. And it stops. We all work together and come up with the right idea, and it's school safety. It's not about gun laws right now. That's another fight, another battle. Let's fix the schools, and then you guys can battle it out whatever you want. But we need our children safe, Monday, tomorrow, whatever day it is. Your kids are gonna go to school. You think everyone's kids are safe? I didn't think it was gonna happen to me. If I knew that, I would have been at the school every day if I knew it was that dangerous.
I think it's amazing how complicated our politicians make issues. And I think hearing from someone who has been a victim of this kind of atrocity and hearing them say we can work together and we can put in things that prevent this in the future is really refreshing. Because I'm talking to my VIPs, and I was actually talking to someone today who's a little bit more liberal, and they said to me, well, why do people need to have those guns in the first place? Why do those? And I said, so what's the solution there? We're going to get rid of all those guns? Do you think that's a possibility, that we're going to go around and collect every single gun from every single bad person? No, we're not. Of course not. We got to prepare. We can't live in this fantasy world where Kamala Harris and Beto O'Rourke are going to go around and do some sort of buyback program, and all the criminals and all the psychopaths and all the monsters are going to say, oh, those aren't allowed anymore? I didn't get the memo. Oh, hold on. Let me go grab it. I got it in my trunk. I'll give it right back. We got to start dealing in reality. And the more I hear about all this money that's being spent everywhere but in the United States of America, our money, our taxpayer money, I'm thinking, go to schoolsafetygrant.org because at least they're doing something to help Americans. We'll be back on the other side with more, guys. This is The Grace Curley Show.